Blog Talk Radio.
But also let me take this opportunity, particularly for our listeners in New York, to express certainly our condolences for the loss of another law enforcement officer, a young African-American police officer in New York City, shot and killed early, quote-unquote, this morning by a gunman. And our prayers and condolences must go out first and foremost to his family and certainly to the New York Police Department and the citizens of New York. It is a sad occasion, if you will. And then, of course, in our own beloved Minneapolis and St. Paul, as reported by the Star Tribune, first touched on by us last week, while we were certainly enjoying the victory of our beloved Minnesota Lynx, we talked about the situation. In fact, I think a caller called in and challenged us with regards to what it is we're doing, if you will. And I thought it was a fair question. I felt that the caller was cutting at us a little bit, but I think it was a fair question. What are all of us doing who have a platform, if you will? And, Don, this comes as an outgrowth of a conversation with the powerful chairman of the Public Safety Committee of the Minneapolis City Council, probably the third most powerful individual in city government behind the mayor, Council President Barb Johnson, and that's Councilman Long Yang. And I asked him a question in a meeting, a closed meeting, if you will, at the Minneapolis Police Department. This was a meeting before the Chief's Advisory Committee met with her. But I raised the question to the councilman, who I consider to be a excellent representative and a friend, if you will, why he was not in attendance at a number of meetings, you know, dealing with violence. You and I have had these discussions in our production meetings. And I was kind of embarrassed to the extent that he, and he's, you know, he's a soft-spoken gentleman and a man of significant pride. And he said he's never invited. And you remember we had a conversation a couple years ago, Mr. Allen. In fact, remember he called in a couple times on our program. And
I remember that
he had been attempting to reach out to African-American leadership in that he represents a large number of African-Americans and has probably one of the most diverse wards in the city. For our domestic and international audiences, the gentleman we're talking about, who is an Asian, is the councilman for the 5th Ward, Democrat out of the 5th Ward, but he is also chairman of a very powerful public safety committee in which the Minneapolis Police Department, Fire Department, and City Civil Rights Department report to. You know what I mean? And
yes.
it was kind of embarrassing to raise the question to him in this meeting about, you know, his attendance at the different powerful meetings with our leaders, and he kind of set the record, you know, correct, if you will, by indicating that he's never invited. Can you explain to me, can you help me, Mr. Allen, and of course our phone lines always be open, can you help me understand, do we have a little bit of reverse racism here?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of it, Mr. Edwards, because I know early on, like you said, we had talked to him, and I've had some sidebar discussions with him over on the corner of Oliver and Laurie and Oliver, and I asked him, you know, I said, well, what's going on? And, you know, like you said, he's a soft-spoken guy. He never talks negatively, at least in public, about anybody. And he just said that, you know, he's wondering what's going on. He's the councilman, but they're basically, you know, overlooking him, not including him. And I think it is a case of reverse racism. I think that they don't respect his position as a councilman. And, you know, it's the usual suspects doing the same thing, you know. And he's just watching them. Because they should be, you know, he is the Fifth Ward's politician. So they should be running things through him, talking to him, having these conversations, inviting him to meetings. But they decided that, you know, that's not a priority. And that's terrible.
Yes, it is. And again, our phone lines are open for the many folks that, you know, sit in the queue and don't have anything to say but are listening and critiquing and et cetera. I just think it's a question that comes into play now with the level of violence, and we have had just a terrible week of shootings and et cetera, in which the lives of everybody by group. We started out, of course, with African Americans, and then the Latino was gunned down in South Minneapolis. A Caucasian woman, 23 years old, gunned down in St. Paul. The east side of St. Paul is almost in a state of emergency. I understand there was a very big meeting this afternoon in St. Paul as Chief Tim Smith tries to get his plan and program together, if you will. I had been looking for a similar signal, if you will, from this side of the river. I know last week the NAACP, and my colleague, Mr. Allen, did cover that press conference, I guess it was, from start to finish. And one of the things that we had said is that we were going to be obligated to point out that they had the press conference to talk about, what was it, Don, economic opportunity and et cetera, once again, for the select few. And I asked Mr. Allen... Yeah. Last week, I got there and it was already over. It lasted about 26 minutes. And I asked him what, you know, had been the reflections about the violence. And, you know, at that point, I think we had had five. We were later to have three more people lose their lives. And my associate, Mr. Allen, who was, you know, here in studio and as co-host with me and me with him, indicated that there was not a word muttered, if you will, by all the great leadership that was there. We had Jeffrey Hassan, the powerful executive director of the African American Leadership Summit. We had Steve Belton, president, chief executive officer of the Urban League, if you will. We had others. But I realized then, Mr. Allen, that as I looked around the room, the most powerfulest individual in the city, you know, along with, of course, the chief, if you will, and the mayor, is the councilman from the Fifth Ward. And I just kind of realized once again, we're at a meeting and everybody's talking about the violence and the continued death of young African Americans, female, male, old African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanics, whites, I mean, and I just realized that there was just an absence, and, you know, I got that kind of eerie feeling that, you know, we have kind of aided and abetted, you know, reverse racism. And I think we have to be responsible as journalists and activists and et cetera in indicating that, hey, we, you know, there needs to be some accounting. Am I off base on this, Mr. Allen? And phone lines are open if folk have an opinion about if it some way or another is appropriate, if it's okay to shut out and to not involve the third most powerful elected official here in the city of Minneapolis. Because maybe, I don't know, maybe I got it wrong. I don't know, maybe I guess it, maybe
no. Yeah. I think you have it absolutely hit the nail on the head, because if you look at that press conference they held at the Urban League, you know, excluding the interim president, Mr. Belton, and looking at some of the other people up there, you have probably in excess of $35 million unaccounted for in the black community. Through different ventures, through, I can mention, there's several different things that never came to fruition, and money was put in these people's organizations, and the black community saw no results in Minneapolis, especially North Minneapolis. And so when I looked at that group that was up there, and I mean, to me, Mr. Edwards, the press conference, you know, with the exclusion, and I'm going to give Mr. Belton kind of the benefit of the doubt, because he's the interim president of the Minneapolis Urban League, and we don't know what's going to happen. And he wasn't really around in that arena when 2008 to 2000, beginning of 2015, when folks were getting grant money left and right and, you know, buying nice cars and being at the bar doing what they do. And I don't want to get people twisted or anything, but I'm not mad at anybody that makes money. But if you're going to make money in a nonprofit arena and you're supposed to help people, especially black people that are doing terribly in this state, who ran and vote for Mark Dayton anyway, you need to be doing something and not just sitting on your wrists. And so as I looked at that crowd, I scanned, I seen people up there that's received money from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Minnesota Department of Education, MnDOT, Minneapolis Foundation, McKnight Foundation, U.S. Bank.
And Northwest Area Foundation.
Yeah, Northwest Area Foundation. Yeah, it was a collection of the usual suspects. And so I took it with a grain of sand. I mean, the council person, Blog Yang, Councilman Yang, should have been there. He should have spoke. And it just seemed to me, Mr. Edward, that with everything that's going on, this is an attempt to kind of buck the system and say, well, we don't need him. We're the African-American Leadership Forum. We're this, we're that. But, you know, not really to knock the African-American Leadership Forum, but all I've really seen from them, Mr. Edwards, are really colorful magazines. You know, I haven't seen
that out about a year ago. Then.
Yeah. And
2 years ago.
Color magazine.
Ago, right.
Yeah. Color magazine never got anybody a job, never got anybody an education. It's just a magazine. So I'm waiting to see. Maybe they might have a plan. They say they have a plan, but we know those plans have a price ticket, you know, and we have a problem.
Let me just cut in for you, Mr. Allen. The phone number is 347-426-3904. Is that correct, Mr. Allen? That is the phone number again, 347.
Yes, sir, that is the phone number.
426-3904. This is the Ron and Don and Ron program. We're talking about the intense level of violence, the escalation in violence, which is certainly pushing us back to the days of Murderapolis, if you will. We are now actually probably at 43. The papers, the media continues to give the wrong numbers, if you will. As we are exclusively reporting here tonight, is that at 3:30 this afternoon, Chief Jhené Harto, who has been on the scene of the violence, if you will, convened her advisory committee of people such as V.J. Smith, who we know, Brother Smith, Sherman Patterson, who for a long time was the police community liaison in the office of former Mayor R.T. Ryback. He is now the liaison in the office of Chief Jhené Harto. Father O'Connor of Ascension Church, who always has a lot of opinions and observations about bad Negroes and things like that, you know what I mean? Some folks from our Shiloh ministry, if you will, and others, Harry Davis Jr., and some other folks who have a lot of opinions about what's good for the colored community. But they've been silent. Now, I was hoping that, the chief would be able to encourage her advisory committee to take a position to join together at the site of a tragic event and murder of a 60-year-old Somalian security guard there in the parking lot of Wendy's there on in the area of Lake Street in Blaisdell. Man gunned down in the street. The chief indicated that, you know, enough is enough, that we need to stand together. But she said something interesting, and she said, I can't and we can't as the police do it by ourselves. And in a conversation today with the councilman, with the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, representative in the Fifth Ward, one of the largest concentrations of diversity and et cetera, he said the same thing to me. He said, I cannot do it by myself. The council can't do it by itself. We need to hear from the community. We need to hear from the leaders. I mean, his question to me was a fair one. You know, I mean, I cringe because, I hate to see it come at us like this. He said, but where are the voices of the African-American leadership and across the board? And I didn't say to him that I had been present, though at the meeting press conference was concluding. But again, as I indicated just a couple minutes ago, my associate who is on the air here with me, Mr. Allen, was there from the get-go at that 10 o'clock press conference that went from 10 to about 10, 20, 23 or 24, and then everybody patted each other, shook hands, and got the heck out of there. Since that time, as I said, we had a 60-year-old Somalian has been gunned down, a young Hispanic has been gunned down, if you will, two young African-Americans gunned down, including one. And I really have been shocked at the silence of the leadership, though I know that the Reverend Jerry McAfee attempted to have a vigil at the site of the young man's death as he was getting off of a bus. He, the victim, and was gunned down, shot outside the church, fled into the church, Mr. Allen, for sanctuary, and was executed there in the foyer of the church. I mean, that is really a rare kind of situation, almost without precedent anywhere. And I keep listening, and then in the meanwhile, just a couple more deaths here and there. By the way, two were shot and wounded in the vicinity of the Little Earth Housing Project along Cedar last night, by the way. We were probably just blessed that they did not succumb. And, I mean, you know, people, I guess, could say, well, they killed 19 this weekend in Chicago. Well, you know, that is a tragedy and must receive the appropriate condolences and et cetera. But we're not Chicago. We're in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Right, Mr. Allen?
You are absolutely correct, Mr. Eric.
Yeah.
You hit it right on point.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely true. And, again, you know, getting back to this, see, Mr. Edwards, I got a lot of telephone calls about what I'm going to write when I went to that press conference. Am I going to bash him? Am I going to do this or going to do that? And I just had to look at it for what it was and what I saw. And I didn't really necessarily get into no back and forth with anybody on it, but, you know, there's a plan. There's a money hustle. I don't care if it's $10 million. I don't care if it's $100 million. No amount of money from the government, from the city of Minneapolis government, from the state, from the feds, is going to solve a problem in the black community that's been created over generations with the same people in charge that's been there all along while it's going on. See, back in slavery, you had the overseers. You know, in 2015, we have the overseers. You know, the evolution of Jim Crow, where they just used to take you out and hang you. Now, you know, they've outsourced, you know, like America outsources jobs to China.
Right.
Well, the white community here has outsourced the termination of black progress to a group of black spokespersons here in this town. This is just my point of view from the right. And so when you look at that, you see these people. Now, and I'm a little disturbed, Mr. Edwards, because on the business side of it, the private sector side of it, there are people in, and I'm just going to go to the East Coast, the West Coast, and down South. There's this young African-American man, does basically the same thing I do for his side company on social media. He's making $225,000 a month. He has 95% black clients, okay? Uh-huh. That would never work in this town. And so you have people doing things and say they, you know, they might have 400 friends on Facebook, you know, and they're speaking for the whole community now with their 400 friends. You know, I got 5,000 friends, but I'm not going to speak. I'm speaking what I want to speak. And so we have a problem with communication. We have a problem with, you know, structure, and we have a problem with these people that I feel personally, no one has proven coming to me and said anything different, that they could possibly be on a money hustle. And there are ways to solve this violence. And if you look at most of these shootings, in some cases, from what I've read in the paper and what I researched, what we talked about in production meetings, a lot of these things are relationship-based. And these are youngsters, for the most part, in some cases.
Very young. Mm-hmm.
And there's no one out there talking to these youth. You know, they're not teaching them etiquette. They're not teaching them, you know, if you stay in school, get a job, you'll be
well,
on the
path. Well, but Don, let me from the left, let me just say I have to differ with you there because, and we've talked about it on this program. We've all, you know, in our respective studios and et cetera. I mean, we have our statistical data and et cetera. I mean, I have to disagree, but because they're, you said it yourself just a short time ago. I mean, money has been poured into the African-American community and other communities of, quote-unquote, the African experience, if you will, to address the problem, bring about a facilitation, if you will, to give hope and expectation to our young people. I've said on my television program, Don, that we have lost the confidence of our young people, and they rightly are questioning what the heck have we been doing. And that goes to the heart of the conversation this afternoon with the, as I consider, the third most powerful elected political leader in Minneapolis, if you will. Who asked a question that apparently can't be answered. And, again, the phone lines are open. And that is, where is the black leadership? Where are their voices as it pertains to the violence, the guns, and et cetera? You know, the only person I hear in this community continuously, and he has been consistent, absolutely consistent, about nobody ever talks about where the guns come from. Everybody can talk about where the dope comes from and et cetera, but no one ever talks about where the guns come from except a man by the name of Spike Moss. For 15 years, 20 years, has raised those questions in numerous meetings that no one is telling me about it, third or fourth or fifth or sixth hand. I've been sitting there, and I've seen Spike Moss raise those questions, and no one can ever tell us how these 15, 14, 16-year-old young black men are able to get their hands on these state-of-the-art weapons and et cetera. And I don't. Can you remember the last time we have seen a significant operation, sting or otherwise, in which gun dealers, not drug dealers, but gun dealers have been rounded up and in prison? Can you tell me the last time that you remember?
No, I don't even recall any of that. And to my point from the right earlier, here goes the problem, Mr. Edwards. Here goes the problem right here. On October 8th, there was this big dinner at the convention center. Had Northside Achievement Zone, Sondra Samuels, the CEO, and it was a big dinner with all these highbrow folks in the black and white community to support NAS initiative to eliminate disparities in Minnesota. And they're saying to label it creating the world's best workforce.
Okay? Yes, I heard.
Target CEO, Brian Cornell, and General Mills CEO Ken Powell presented Northside Achievement Zone and Sondra Samuels a check for $6 million at that dinner. Mm-hmm. Governor Dayton was there, his entourage. And that's one level. Now, that's an upper echelon. That's like as high as you, we'll just call that the 1%, okay?
Yeah, it's the 1%.
Now, mm-hmm. between the 1% and the lower one-third of the community, you have damn near 90 levels, okay, of people that never see any of this going on, never benefit from any of this going on, but this continues. So we know now $6 million from the targeting General Mills is going to Northside Achievement Zone. Now, I would gather if you go and look further into Northside Achievement Zone, which I'm going to do in the next week, and let's look at the salaries, a huge chunk of that is going to the program salaries and the people that they have on staff. And what needs to be done, like if you take a little agency, three or four guys in it, that are going out on the street talking, getting
or women,
back
or women,
school,
we don't want to be
or women,
of,
yeah,
of
women.
Yes, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you put $6 million and some accountability in their coffers, and if they go to someone's house and don't have groceries, they mm-hmm. go out and fill the refrigerator up. Now you got to go to mm-hmm. school, you got to do this, go do that.
Particularly when your service area is basically 10 by 20 blocks, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that $6 million would last damn near 3 or 4 years. Okay?
Now, that
$6
million, by the way, for our listening audience, Mr. Allen, we are obligated to make as much clarity and transparency. That $6 million is on top of another $22 million that is still in play from the $28 million grant mm-hmm. given to the NAS zone about going on 2 years now, right? Okay. So, Mr. Allen is making an interesting point with regards to how is the money being spent. In fact, Mr. Allen said just minutes ago, an accounting. I myself, Mr. Allen, a couple months ago in my column in the Minnesota Post and Recorder, the largest and oldest black newspaper in the state of Minnesota, that we really needed to have an audit. There really needs to be an audit, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Just like the one that they're doing on the Community Action Agency that has already mm-hmm. led to some indictments, if you will, that we really need to find out, I mean, what has happened to the money. One piece of money that we clearly know, and we know that people are not happy when we talk about it, but we will continue to do that, is, of course, the History Museum.
Yes.
Which was supposedly to provide us with a historical perspective on how we started, you know, where we've been and where we're going in the African-American community. But I say again, Mr. Allen, and the phone lines are open. I mean, you know, if folk desire to be heard on this, the number 347-426-3904. This is the Ron and Don program, if you will, again, 347-426-3904. And we're hoping to get a call from South Africa. We're really sorry that we missed that connection last week. But I'm challenging listeners out there to indicate to us how shall we address this problem of the violence that is gripping us once again. And we've been through too many periods of violence and mayhem and heartbreak and et cetera since the mid-1980s to continue to let this happen. You know, as I said, when you get a situation where a 17-year-old African-American who has had an altercation on a bus that leads to a situation where he is shot in front of a church, he flees into the church seeking sanctuary, is followed by the gunman, who is as equally, in fact, is younger than his, is now about to be victim, and just executes him right there in the foyer of the church, if you will. We have a young man whose mother sent her three sons here from a city in Indiana to be safe, thinking that this was safe. Is in a car on 26 and in the vicinity of 26 and Lindale, waiting on his father, who had gone into an apartment building There's a five-month-old baby in the car. His 14-year-old brother and a 27-year-old woman, the mother of the baby, are in the car. Automobile pulls up and gunmen open fire and blow this young man's head off. I mean, you know, brain matter and et cetera, all on the back seat of the car and et cetera. And I don't know, Don, is there a comfort level? Because the other problem that's coming up, I see that WCCO and to some degree the Star Tribune have touched on it. We do a piece on it in our column for next week's edition of the Spokesman Recorder. This whole thing about I don't want to be involved in snitching. I don't want to be involved. I didn't see what happened. I don't know what happened. I ain't got a clue what happened. I ain't got nothing to say. That sounds, you know, mono until it's one of your loved ones that are gunned down. Right, Mr. Allen?
You are absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards, on that. They need to watch that.
Are you getting text messages and et cetera? I mean,
yes.
The phone lines are open. The phone lines
are wide open.
Yeah, yeah. Because a member of the Minneapolis City Council, chairman of the Powerful Public Safety Committee, asked me today in a meeting, where is the black leadership? Where is the voice of the African-American community? This elected political leader is asking for guidance. He wants to know what it is that he and his 12 council colleagues, hopefully joining the mayor and the chief and et cetera, what we could do to stem this tide. Can we afford to have people from ages 17 to 60 being gunned down in 1 week in our city? Again, like I said, I understand the folk to talk about where they killed 19 in Chicago. Well, this ain't Chicago. This is not Chicago, Illinois. You know, proportionally and et cetera, we don't come close to in numbers of population and et cetera. But we sure proportionally come close in regards to the casualty list and to the number of guns that are in our neighborhoods and on our streets. And, you know, we reported last week 36 fights at Henry High School. They've had probably, though last week was the Minnesota Education Association piece, so school actually was for 2 days. But no sooner than school convened again this past Monday, they were fighting up there. Okay. Now, the police have stopped an individual who tried to come into the school with guns. I mean, it's just a matter of time before a young person or a teacher or a security person is seriously injured or shot and killed or whatever. And then we'll all be wringing our hands trying to pretend like we're surprised by what happened. At some point, as Chief Jhené Harto said, at some point we have to come together with a plan of action, a commitment to a resolution of some of these problems, including what my associate, Mr. Allen, has said, that there are a number of other components that have to come into play, and that includes education. That includes housing, if you will. That includes the opportunity for employment and et cetera. If we're not prepared to address that, I guess then we are condemning ourselves to a continuation for the future of this kind of violence. Is that where we're going, Mr. Allen?
Mr. Evans, you're absolutely correct. But you know, and also another thing that's happening here, some of these folks are trying to create a legacy. Okay. The Urban League, the NAACP, a couple other places have been here a very long time.
Yes, they have.
And some of these folks are trying to cheat the system. They're not helping the Urban League. The African American Leadership Forum is not really helping the Urban League achieve this glory that had when you were the president of the board or the chairman of the board. Okay, they're trying to do their own thing to lead their own. So this new thing is going to be African American Leadership Forum in 30 years. It's not going to be the Urban League. What they're trying to do is cheat destiny, move around, sweat equity, and get a drop in the bucket. Okay, play with a few million dollars from the governor or someone like that to try to address something that's going on. And they're starch shirts. They're like the Republican Party headquarters. You know, if you're not in the grassroots, if you can't talk corporate one day and later that day be in the streets talking to the people and understanding, relating to what they need, you're worthless. And these people have made themselves worthless, basically. If you don't, at that press, who was at the press conference? Mr. Edwards, those people in that room are the same people that are always in the room. I'm talking about the audience.
Yes.
People that were standing
in front. I took note of that when I came in. Yes.
And the people in the front are the usual suspects. Okay.
What was it?
I
19
know.
Individuals standing along the wall behind
the
interim president of the Urban League of Minneapolis. Almost like the Tabernacle Choir singing Hallelujah.
And if you notice, I know you already know this, but to our listeners and anyone who's tuned in right now, we have a few people in the queue, of course. Thank you for listening. But if you criticize something, it's because you love it. I love my people. I want them to do better. But I see this group of people who has marginalized me. They have marginalized you, Mr. Edwards. They have marginalized other people that don't agree with their ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And they have suspended progress. And what they are, they're caught in a groupthink. Okay, you and I, Mr. Edwards, play the central negatives. We're the people that say,
okay.
Hey, we'll say, hey, wait a minute. That doesn't sound like it's good. That sounds crazy. Maybe if we look at it over here and come from this direction, you know, we might have it all wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like to hear that. They don't like to hear that Mr. Edwards or Don or Wesley or Lenny or Mr. Tucker or anybody like that has a new idea, because we haven't been vetted through that system of approval and kissed so much booty that our noses are brown, okay? Because we speak what's on our mind. And they can't have that because they have made too many mistakes up to this point. The first and main thing that's killing them, Mr. Edwards, is that they are the same people on the wall in the audience that always show up. That group has been burnt out since I've been covering, since 2008. That group is, they've been burnt out. There's no, if no good ideas can come out of this group. Like, after the meeting, Mr. Edwards, I went to Mr. Belton, and I said, you know, Mr. Belton, I sent you a proposal to deal with the veterans, and there's more minority homeless veterans here.
And let me just say,
Mr. Allen,
my associate, my colleague here, is a honorably discharged veteran of the United States military, having served with distinction and honor. So he knows what he's talking about. He has a real strong passion for the proposition of the veterans, if you will, so that we're absolutely clear on that to our listening audience. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, thank you. And so Home Depot was giving out up to $500,000 to house veterans that are having some troubles, mental health issues. And I thought for sure the Urban League still had that group home over on Emerson.
No. They
okay.
lost
well,
that some time
out
ago.
Later. I found that out. I found that under Scott Gray's watch. And I found that out later, but I just went ahead and put together one hell of a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they said, can you email it to this person here who is my executive assistant, and she will get it to me? Because there was a time constraint. Mr. Edwards, I didn't charge him nothing. I had the support of the Council on Black Minnesotans, okay, who was willing to throw in if the grant even looked right, like it was coming for the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
The Council on Black Minnesotans was ready to drop down $5,000 in administrative costs to make sure that licenses were received, house was updated, furniture, everything we need to house 10 to 15 veterans, okay, in a particular place.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right in the heart of North Minneapolis, in a quiet neighborhood. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I says, well, you know, I'm kind of set back because you never responded to my proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, I never got it. I said, well, I emailed it to the person that you told me to email it to. Now, what I found out, Mr. Edwards, is you have people inside the Urban League connected with the African-American Leadership Forum and these other fringe groups that are in positions to curtail anything that you want to do, that you want to send. This explains a lot of stuff to me that I sent to the Urban League and got no response. And the person who is doing it needs to go. I mean, she's a sweet woman, but she needs to find another job. Because if she's going to not give a document to a president of an organization that sounds like he might want to work with veterans and other people, if she's doing it to me, she did it to other people.
Okay? Well, and so, it probably is not hard to reduce to the, you know, to the common denominator who it is, because I don't think that the Urban League has any more than about 9 individual paid staff people as we speak. This is an organization that has gone from 114 employees a decade ago to about 9 employees as we speak, following quickly and rapidly in the footsteps of the now defunct St. Paul Urban League. And that's another part of the discussion that is, of course, going on amongst younger African Americans about what has happened to our institutions, Mr. Allen. And we're just kind of obligated to say that. I know that some accuse us as being, you know, members of the Black Fourth Estate of being negative and et cetera. This is not negativism that we are promoting. We are talking about negativism and failure, if you will, but it's a part of what comes with, quote-unquote, clarity, if you will, transparency and et cetera. Let me just also say this, because, again, you know, the test is in place. You know, is there anyone out there that has some observations? Because we're talking in terms of trying to maintain the preservation of life. I sat with a elected political leader today who, quote-unquote, is not of our Pacific community, but is of the community, as I said before, probably the third most powerful elected political leader in the Twin Cities. And I felt more compassion and concern about the African-American community and the deaths and et cetera, as well as clearly his compassion for his own community, than I have seen or felt from a lot of the leaders that, or at least pretend to be leaders, who quote-unquote, are always quick to be in the room asking for a handout. And I repeat again, the chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee of the Minneapolis City Council specifically indicated, what is it that I need to hear from the African-American leadership, and are they present, and are they concerned, where are they at? And it was an embarrassment for yours truly, Mr. Allen, a man that has been involved for, almost 60 years with the struggle in this community since, you know, I came out of high school, if you will, to have to sit and say, I don't know what it is that is not driving them. Notice the terminology, not driving them to display the kind of compassion I saw coming from him. You know what I mean? I mean, it's sad, it's frightening, if you will, but it's a reality. And I'm not at the end of my wits, because I'm going to continue, as I have for many, many, many years and the decades, to do what it is that I can. But I've been around long enough, Mr. Allen, with something called experience, to know that this is the kind of situation and circumstances that leads to genocide.
Yep, absolutely.
It makes you become
absolutely
a past tense as it pertains to your existence and presence within the historical portfolio. I mean, really, I mean, I cannot believe the silence. I mean, we have a minister now who is also an individual involved with a organization that is a cap agency in Ramsey County and Washington County, former executive director of the Urban League, if you will, et cetera, who has actually had a nervous breakdown as an outgrowth of the events in his church a week ago.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the execution of a 17-year-old African-American, as we said, for the fourth or fifth time in the foyer of that church. I mean, you know, this minister slash executive of a government entity almost had to be. Well, I think he was recommended to get some bed rest. Shocked him. Just it almost destroyed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, at what point does this become something that galvanizes and brings us together? But it's not happening. It's not happening. And I repeat, I'm going to continue to do this. The statement by the chief of police of this city yesterday to a group of over 100 Somali citizens and their supporters and et cetera said that this has to cease and desist, that we must begin to develop solutions, if you will, answers and commitments to deal with this, because our young people, we may not want to admit it, Mr. Allen, but our young people are screaming and hollering and reaching out to us who say that we bring the experience and the knowledge and the wisdom and et cetera to help them, you know, to do something that definitely will bring about a resolution and provide some kind of productivity and et cetera. I just don't see it happening, man. So, you think about Chicago, like, you know, the guy said to me today, well, you know, they killed 19 over the weekend in Chicago. I mean, people are talking as if they're in a war zone in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria. You know what I mean? We become almost immune to the violence that is taking the lives of our people. I don't know. I just don't know. Any calls in there,
yeah.
Don?
No, we have people just sitting in the queue. I've been trying to ask them if they want to get on the air. And if you do want to get on the air, hang up and call back, and I'll see you just starting seconds again, and I will definitely plug you in. But as it stands now, Mr. Edwards don't want to have this conversation. But this
they don't
is,
want to commit
it's,
to
it's
re- Okay.
Yeah, it's really nerve-wracking, Mr. Edwards, because you have that many people shot and killed. Then you have a group of people who are basically just a collective impact agency, which means they're viral unto themselves, and you don't see no new people. So I remember we had this conversation, Mr. Edwards, that I know a lot of professional black men and women that live in Woodbury, Dinah, Maple Grove, Stillwater,
in
different areas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you never see these people at any community meetings, at any press conferences, ever. So I was curious. I was at a gathering, barbecue, having a good time. I said, hey, how come I don't ever see you at this or this or that? Man, he says, I got an MBA. Other ones say, I got a PhD. And they weren't trying to brag about the degrees they had or anything like that.
Okay,
said,
I'll
but,
take your word
know,
for it.
Said,
okay.
Yeah. He said a few years ago, you know, I went in and they asked someone, people in the community asked me to do some work for them, and I just did it to give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, well, they took my idea, ran with it, got a $100,000 grant, and no one ever called me back or followed up. That's what one guy
yes,
said.
I've heard the same scenario for far too many years, decades, in fact, and it has always bothered me that these idea thefts were taking place and continue to take place. I heard a reflection made about 3 weeks ago, and the persons who were talking to me had no idea that I have I'm not a member, but I have an affiliation with the Boulez, the most prestigious social Negro group in America, if you will. In fact, I think that a man by the name of Cornell Moore is still the president of the Boulez here in the Twin Cities. Oh, they are the supreme of the supremes. In fact, they had their national convention here about 11, 12 years ago. You know, they go around the country just like the Urban League, NAACP. The National Medical Association, the National Lawyers Association, who, by the way, will be having their convention in Oakland. I see the itinerary of the president of the NAACP, who is also a professor of law at St. Thomas. that he will be there and on a panel in Oakland. And I hope that in the time of doing that, I hope she talks in terms of what her organization, the NAACP, as well as Black Lives Matter, what they've been doing, what recommendations they've made to the chief of police and to particularly to the mayor. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yep.
And,
oh, yeah.
Because these organizations. But I want to go back to the Boulets. Now, you are familiar with that group, are you not, Nestel?
Oh yeah, the Boulets. They're the best of the best of the best, like the Marines.
Absolutely, absolutely.
A black organization. With etiquette, style, class. Do things the right way the first time. First things first. Okay.
You sound like you're reading from the manifesto. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm not. I'm just saying. I'm looking at the screen on the computer. I haven't even Googled it because you know enough about them to understand that these are professional African Americans from around the United States and in some cases from around the world. Connections everywhere.
Absolutely.
And, I actually know someone here locally. She's a private person. I can't say her name, but her father, a superintendent of Minneapolis Public Schools, a long time ago.
Speak up just a little bit, Mr. Allen, so that I can hear. Give me that again.
Okay, I know a young lady here, very smart. Her father, former superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools, when it was number one in the United States, when the school system was the most applauded and celebrated system in the country, people from Singapore used to come here. And Singapore is not number one school.
Sure did, didn't they? Yes.
Okay. And so... their family was members of the Boulet. And I was talking to her about 2 months ago because her daughter is a professional. And I said, well, if there's anything I can do, because I could, she's going to law school and she might have went over here to Hamlin where I'm at. And she goes, oh, thank you very much, but we know this person over here through the Boulet that said as soon as she gets done there that they're going to hire her there for 2 years experience, and then she'll go over here, and then she might become a partner over here. The girl's going to be making about 100 grand a year the minute she hits the lambskin, get it from school. Okay, it's already set up. The path is already there. And I know all her kids are like children are like that because of that affiliation. Now, I say this, Mr. Edwards, to say and break it down is that can happen at a community level, okay?
Yes.
These mentors, these – one thing, the school district pays, $21,000, I think it is, per child in the Minneapolis Public Schools?
That's the latest figure that we've all had and heard. Yes, I would concur, yes. Mm-hmm.
So what's wrong – with educating these, because children in Africa they on the floor and studying, and they come to America and they're ahead of our children here. And so, what's wrong with cutting that $21,000 per student down to say $15,000 or something in that neighborhood, and hiring 1,000 mentors, 1,000 mothers, to mentor their kids. They're children that are in preschool and get them ready to read, numbers and letters by the time they get to kindergarten. And this is what scares these people, Mr. Edwards, because I sent this proposal over to the Commissioner of Education, Brenda Casales, that was to that effect was to do something like that, but also step into the Federal Reserve, who can wake up one morning and piss $200 trillion into the housing market like it was nothing.
Absolutely.
And then partner.
Fannie Mae.
Fannie Mae and all. And partner to solve all these inequities that are going on, these disparities that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like this would be a good idea, but these people, they're not forward thinkers. They're not visionary. The last visionary that was in that category that hung out with those people that actually really was a visionary and he was kind of cool with me was Dr. Robert Jones at the University of Minnesota.
Dr. Jones, who is now the chancellor of the New York State higher education system in Albany, New York. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Because
we used to have these conversations.
Yeah,
we had these conversations, and the guy would, you know, he said, he was a visionary. He saw what I was talking about. But he also recognized the difficulty that I would have selling it, even though it was great. He says people in Minneapolis, from what he understood and what he's seen, do not like people to be too much in the forward-thinking realm. Okay? You get marginalized and rejected. He knew the whole picture already, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah,
and
Doc Jones was here for quite some time. I remember him.
Yeah.
I think he used to live there for a number of years there on Washburn, right off of Plymouth. Very lovely home up in that area. Let me also do this because we're coming down to the last 4 or 5 minutes of tonight's program.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to indicate that the NAACP president and head of the Black Lives Matter group here in Minneapolis will be a panelist on the National Lawyers Guild Conference in Oakland, California, October 23rd through the 25th. You know, I'm thanking Mr. Allen that in light of what has been happening across the country and going back to the top of this program with regards to our condolences to the family of an African-American police officer shot to death earlier this morning in New York City, shot through the head, if you will, that we, you know, need to be somewhat enlightened on what the agenda looks like for the remainder of 2015 and what the agenda will look like in 2016 and what the thinking of the NAACP and Black Lives Matter and organizations such as that with regards to the violence. And so, I wish that I was in a position. I'd like to travel out to Oakland and attend the National Lawyers Guild conference, if you will, but I think it's just appropriate to point out that one of our leaders will be at that conference and will be a panelist discussing a multiplicity of legal matters. So just want to kind of throw that out, but I think that we should send a communique asking if she will join us upon her return next Wednesday to kind of enlighten us and talk a little bit, because, you know, particularly you, Mr. Allen, have been criticized for being critical of her. I know that I've also been criticized. So we want to try to reach out. And I'm going to, at this time, take the prerogative of asking the NAACP to convene upon the return of its president from Oakland, California, from the National Lawyers Guild, to invite the chairman of the Public Safety Committee of the Minneapolis City Council, who is also a lawyer, by the way, Councilman Wong-Yang, Democrat, 5th Ward, to join her and a panel discussion sponsored by the NAACP or whoever else wants to do it in the next 10 days to begin to give us a vision, if you will, want to be ecumenical to some degree, a vision of what it is that we need to do to try to alleviate this violence that is gripping both of our cities, if you will. And I'm making that offer, if you will. I certainly cannot speak for any of them, but I hear people saying what is being done and et cetera. Well, you know, until reflections are enunciated and et cetera, nothing's going to happen, right? So I think, Mr. Allen,
absolutely,
it would be an excellent opportunity to show that there is not reverse racism going on as it pertains to the council member from the 5th Ward, that we help the NAACP put together a forum. It can be a small one, you know, it can be at the Urban League or wherever, you know, we don't want to see any bully fights going on. But I think that we maybe, you know, Don and Ron will initiate a recommendation. Now, we may not be the right kind of people, and this is one where I don't care if they steal our ideas, as long as it gets done.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, Don, we're coming up on it. I hear you tuning up, you know, the main man and taking us home with the kind of song. But I'm sorry that some of the folks did not see fit to call and give their observations, if you will. But Don and Ron are continuously in position to do that, and that's what we're going to continue to do, aren't we, Mr. Ellis?
Absolutely.